This is Big Mike Aguirre, and you are listening to the Rock Paper Podcast with Chris and Shane. Tune in often.
What's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. I'm down here in beautiful Central West End, hanging out at Herbie's Vintage 72. It's my first time here. I feel slightly underdressed in my Real Big Fish shirt, but it's a beautiful place. And by the way, Real Big Fish is in town next week at the pageant with Less Than Jake and Authority Zero, so that should be a good time.
But, 1997 is in town.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So my guest this week is Big Mike Aguirre.
It's Aguirre.
I'm sorry.
Do you know how to roll your R's?
No.
It's way more fun if you say it right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's Aguirre.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's all right.
Thanks for the
next one we do, we'll have a little Latina here.
Yeah.
If you say it right. Yeah. But it's good.
I was afraid I messed that up.
It's okay. It was good. Yeah. You went for it.
But yeah, man, thanks for hanging out tonight. Thanks for joining me. First guest in February, and we just had Super Bowl. Did you watch the game?
I watched the game. I wanted both teams to lose.
Pretty sure everybody did.
I do like hockey, but again, other than hockey, I hate professional sports because it's a bunch of millionaires playing kids' games.
Yeah.
Which is what I do. I play a kids' game called music, but the millionaire part is not quite there. So maybe it's a little sour grapes thing, but...
it's competition for you every night, too. Like, you know, it's like if there's a Cardinals game on or the game in town and... whatever it is, that's a direct competition with live entertainment.
So. It's a good point. I don't like to preach, but St. Louis has been known as a... Oh, wow, thank you. That was really quick.
Right.
Sorry, guys. You need cutlery.
we'll steal from this table. Yeah, we're good. St. Louis is often called a beer and baseball town.
Yeah.
And people will shuck out hundreds of dollars to go to a game, but then they have a tough time... paying a cover to see a band that's sweating it out and bleeding it out and working their butts off. So I complain about that a little bit. But, St. Louis is an excellent spot. I apologize for the interruption there, but since it's Shane's first time here at Herbie's, we had to get a little duck confit crepe, which just at 3 a.m. when you go for the grilled stuffed burrito, this if you have this ahead of time, even 6 hours ahead of time, you don't have to make that grilled stuffed burrito.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll get to that later.
Looks fantastic.
And it's going to sound fantastic when you have a bite, whenever we do that. We're going to try to resist as long as we can.
But, yeah, man, what you're saying about St. Louis is one of my biggest things. That's why I've been trying to do this show, trying to spotlight these different town people, let people know there's a lot more in St. Louis than... just the bands that come through Verizon and or Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, whatever they call them now. It just seems like that's when everybody gets excited about a show. But I'm like, there's just for me, it's really exciting to have some of my favorite bands in my hometown that I can go see a couple times a week if I wanted to, or whatever it is. And so for me, it's really exciting to be here in St. Louis right now. There's a lot of really great talent. There's very eclectic blend of talent too. Like so, it's fun to see it all kind of come together and but yeah, you play out a lot with and you call the Blue City All Stars, which I like that how you kind of have a revolving door of a lot of local musicians that kind of it's a different group a different band with you almost every time. Or
yeah, the bottom line with me is that. When I was young, I was maybe 18 or 19 years old, and I had been playing guitar in the basement for a couple of years, and I got a hold of some blues records that really moved me, and then I had the opportunity. It was funny. I'm from Belleville, Illinois, right across the river, and I saw a guy named David D playing at one of the little podunk bars down there, and David D, most people wouldn't know, is an incredibly talented musician who has been playing since the 60s, who had a hit record called Going Fishing. And a hit record, he never got paid, But in like the 80s, early 80s and all this stuff. And he's a left-handed guitar player. He had a flying V, guitar. It looked so cool. And he let me sit in with him. And I'm like, oh, cool, I'm going to sit in with a band, and I'm a little stupid white kid, and I'm going to play blues with him. And I knew two Stevie Ray Vaughan songs, so I got this waxed. I got it figured out. And then sitting in with him blew my mind because he knew all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing about St. Louis is that it's so many talented musicians. And a lot of people fixate on the old black guys from Mississippi who, unfortunately, are gone now. Like, you had James Crutchfield, you had Oliver Sane, you had all these guys that were, like, the first-generation guys that came from Mississippi and set up shop, and Tommy Bankhead's another one in St. Louis. But all those guys played in bands and had other guys supporting them and making them sound great, and those guys are still here. So, like, Rich McDonough, Tom Maloney, there's such a family of blues musicians in St. Louis that have been through the trenches and come into their own right, and there's like the second generation that's been keeping it going, and now you've got younger guys like me, a younger generation, and now unfortunately I'm not the young generation, there's another one coming up that are incredibly full of talent. And so St. Louis as its own, you mentioned, you know, being proud of the fact that you can go listen to bands that don't necessarily come through Verizon Amphitheater.
Yeah.
The venues that make this music happen, that pay musicians a different rate, which you won't find in Memphis or Chicago or Austin or New Orleans, are local venues. So, you know, in this day and age, I myself feel it's really important to buy local and support local business, because the big cats make all the money and could care about a community. But it's always the local venues that are going out there and shelling it out and giving opportunities for the musicians that have grown here to do their thing. And so the Blue City All-Stars concept is, there's this immense amount of talent in town, and every year or every couple of months, I'm going to find another guy that I can go out and listen to and learn from. You know, this is me being 18 or 19, and learn from them and gain their respect and try to show that I'm not a weekend warrior, that I actually care about this music and want to learn and want to get better. And the Blue City All-Stars is the fact that it is a revolving door, because there's so many great musicians and I want to play with all of them.
Right.
So the easiest way, you could wait for them to call you, which could never happen, or you could sit in maybe, or you could just book the damn show and hire them and get a chance to play with these different personalities.
Right.
And that's what the Blue City All-Stars concept has always been. And so it's just a privilege and it's an honor to be able to call up pretty much anybody that I love and respect in this town musically. Mm-hmm. And they'll answer the phone, number one, which is great. And then number two, we can make music together. And every time we do that, it's a blast. And the people that are there get into it, and the venues keep doing it. And so it's very inclusive concept. And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
I'm really thankful for the fact that I've been able to do that. Because the other thing I wanted to mention is St. Louis, most people that live here don't really understand. It's kind of a beer and baseball town. They don't realize what a treasure they have. Mm-hmm. Where we're not in Delaware, thank God. We're not in Cleveland. We're not in Europe or Asia or anything like this. We are all one percenters by living in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And we have access to this incredible pool of talent that no other place in the world, literally, can lay claim to. And it's here every night. And 90% of the people here just don't really care, or they're upset about paying for a cover charge to pay the band sometimes. And they don't realize how great it is. And I've got friends from Europe and from all over the world that will literally book a trip to the United States and make sure they come to St. Louis so they can listen to the music.
Yeah.
So part of my big thing is to expose both to the people here and both the people out of St. Louis how great a resource and a treasure that St. Louis music is. And it doesn't have to be blues.
Sure.
It's just a real fortunate thing that we have here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was just talking the other day about the last time I went to see Chuck Berry play Blueberry Hill, and how we were standing next to somebody from Alaska that flew in. They planned their vacation around coming to St. Louis primarily to see Chuck play before, you know, before he's gone.
And, while he's here. It's amazing.
Yeah,
he's been here for the birth, and he's still here for 60 years of rock and roll.
Yeah, it's just an incredible thing that we have here. And, I mean, Chuck, and you know, from what he kind of led the way for a lot of people. And it's, there's, like you said, there's a younger, new generation coming up that are still carrying on this great tradition of blues music in St. Louis, and, or, you know, just all music in St. Louis. And
yeah, anything that touched or that that Chuck did, everybody's got their finger in it. It doesn't matter what kind of music you play, you've got a debt to Chuck. And but really, by extension, Johnny Johnson, who is his piano player, who probably Chuck stole all of his licks from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the coolest thing about blues music in particular is that the more you dig into a particular sound and the more you listen to an artist and then listen to their influences, you realize that the roots are deep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Illinois, right? The east side of the river. Cahokia was, you know, an Indian city that was bigger than some of the biggest cities in Florence, you know, or not Florence, but Europe, you know, 500 years ago before Christopher Columbus here. So there's been a vibe, there's been a population, and there's been, I would argue that there's been music there that runs really deep. And the more you dig into it, the more you find. And there's people that are very knowledgeable about, you know, the scholarly side of that. And then also the people that can just bring it on stage where you might feel it. You don't realize the history that's going into what you're hearing and what's making you move or make the bad decisions that you do at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. But the roots run deep here, and it's really rewarding to dig deeper and deeper and deeper and see where all those connections happen, because you never reach the bottom.
Right. So you, we talked a little bit about this off mic about this blues society that's going on in St. Louis, and then they're looking to do this blues museum here in you. Have you been doing a lot of this stuff with them? Like,
I haven't been directly contributing or involved with the National Blues Museum. Yeah. I believe that's going to be opening up late this year, and that's a huge project. There's a B.B. King Museum down in Indianola, Mississippi. There's been this and that and the other, but there's never been a National Blues Museum scope. Mm-hmm. And that's what St. Louis is trying to bring to the table, because, again, St. Louis is often overlooked by the likes of Nashville or Chicago and New Orleans or Austin as being a music town, and they're kind of down on the list. But ultimately, I think there's a strong argument that the blues has, St. Louis has a rightful place in that history, and not just that it's a dusty old artifact, but that it's living and breathing, and that's the important thing. And I think the one difference is that all of those other cities, actually, the government and the leaders of those cities invest in that music scene, and they promote it, and they do that. St. Louis has never really had that kind of support. Mm-hmm. I've got unpaid parking tickets that I don't even know what the total is of them right now. But and that's just so my stuff doesn't get broke into. But St. Louis has got, it's got the present, and it's got the history, and it's only local people, the people that listen to music, that love it, that come out and support bands, the venues that love it and support bands, and the bands that dedicate themselves to keeping that going. And that's, it's a really grassroots thing, and in this day and age, I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
And so the National Blues Museum is kind of a high-profile project to... I mean, they sent kids to the White House for Blues in the Schools, and they've done some other great projects. And that can kind of maybe net some big fish support, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And attract people from outside. But every day, musicians are, and not just blues, but that music tradition is alive and well here.
Sure.
And that's something to be really proud of also.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. Well, let alone, like I said, being a fan of the blues, but just the fact that it could give us some national exposure as a community, and then give us a big boost, you know, hopefully, and to grow and continue to and inspire, you know, younger talent to into the blues and everything else, like, so.
And St. Louis has gotten a bad rap this last year for rightful reasons, you know, everything that's going on.
Yeah,
we don't live in a vacuum, but the coolest thing to me, aside from the fact that the music moves me, like a lot of the stuff I hear on the radio just doesn't.
Right.
Is that it's diversity that is the key. I mean, it doesn't matter where you come from, but you can tap into a universal language with music that crosses class lines, crosses income lines, crosses racial lines, and people all over the world love this stuff because there's essential truths involved to it. And I think that's an incredibly important thing to pass on to younger generation now, particularly in St. Louis with everything that we got going on, is that, you know, there's a meeting, I mean, with all the rivers. You got the Mississippi River, the Missouri and the Ohio. The confluence is what built St. Louis as a town. There's these different people traveling up and coming through the gateway to the West, really. And then musically, you know, stuff moving up from Mississippi and New Orleans and kind of melding here on the way to Chicago really made its own thing. So diversity is the best thing we have going for us, and it seems like the city is 50 years behind the times officially when it comes to that, and we've got issues, but there's something alive and pulsing that is worth buying into, and unfortunately big business is dumb enough to exploit it, which we should probably be thankful for, and I think the city leaders are not on board with investing in it or being having the vision to really invest in it and make it a pinnacle of what St. Louis is about, but it's people that are doing it. And I love the fact that it's local businesses and local people coming out and making something happen that's real and not plastic. Because you go to Nashville or L.A. and you get Lady Gaga or all that bro country crap. And here it's real people doing it for $50 a night, you know. Yeah. And, it's a blast.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen you live, but I think last time I remember seeing you, and we talked a little bit, was at the Big Muddy Blues Festival over the summer, and that was, I mean, just echoing the point too, the something like that, a big festival on that level, and the fact that how many people were out there in the streets through the Laclede's Landing there, and it was just really exciting to be a part of all that and to see the fans out and enjoying the music, and the fact that there was, you know, most of those side stages was all local talent, and that was, you know, just really great to see.
It was great to see, and it was sad to see that Taste of St. Louis had to move to Chesterfield.
Yeah.
Because for a number of years they were doing the Blues Week concert, and right. that was Entertainment St. Louis did an incredible job of treating musicians like royalty, which, you know, we dig through the trenches. We're not looking for diva status, but it's nice to have an opportunity to play for that many people, period. Yeah. And then it's also nice to have, you know, a nice sound system, and then maybe a place to park, and all this stuff, and being taken care of so that you can just put all your energy into putting on a show for everybody.
Right.
And it was free, and you had families out there, you had low-income people out there, you had people, you know, from the suburbs coming out and checking out, and everybody was getting down together. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we lost that, but we had an opportunity with the Big Money Festival, even though management changed, to do that one more time. And, yeah, we were really fortunate the day we played to have just a packed street. Second Street was packed as far as I could see. And there's nothing more thrilling as an entertainer to have a sea of people listening and getting down to what you're doing. And then it's on you. And that's the cool thing about blues music, is not just sitting there listening to the band and thinking, oh, wow, they're great, but really being interactive and getting people into it. Mm-hmm. And that energy that is exchanged between the audience and that, I think that's what blues is all about. And you were there, you saw it. I mean, it was pretty powerful, and it was great to bring different people together just through the universal language of music.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people up dancing and stuff, and that's what, like you said, it's an energy, and that's one thing that draws me into all the music is and live music, and especially is that it moved me, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a lot of this stuff that just, you know, I don't feel it, like you said, but going out and watching some of these guys play live, and it's just you know, you can't help it. It's a physical reaction to it, and you got to get up and move and dance and sing along and everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of great old blues musicians, you know, Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters. Guys couldn't read or write, but they could lay something down and tap into something that was universal and powerful and move someone more than a whole orchestra, you know, of educated, you know, music theory equipped musicians can do. And so there's some truth to that. I think there's a saying that blues is three chords, because it's not all that complicated of a progression. It's three chords and the truth.
Right.
And the truth is the biggest part of that, because if you're just regurgitating your Stevie Ray Vaughan licks or Joe Satriani or just trying to show off how many notes you know how to play, that's one thing. But if you're engaging with the audience and making them feel every note you play, that's when you're really making something happen.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible feeling on stage when you're doing that, but I mean, you could zip off a million notes in a solo to empty tables. It wouldn't mean anything. If you get three notes and there's three people in the audience that get those, then that makes all the difference in the world.
Right. Another one I was going to... we talked...
Are you looking for a fork? I know we've been smelling this.
Sure.
Comfy. Yeah.
Let's take
see where this goes.
Yeah, let's try this out. So what you said this was what?
This is a duck crepe.
Yeah. Here we go. I'm trying this out first.
Herbie's, it's got amazing food, people. You gotta check it out.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty tasty.
Yeah. It beats the Jack in the Crack at 3 a.m. I gotta sell it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is good. So, you tapped on a little bit earlier about your being in Belleville and your blues records and stuff. So, what kind of stuff? Where did you start with all this? Like, you know, when coming up, and who influenced you to get out and play and start doing all this?
I grew up. I was born in 1980, and I had an older brother. So I was in Iron Maiden, Metallica, Guns N' Roses, all that hair band stuff. Yeah. It was the best, because he'd leave to go to college and I'd just play with his guitar. It was awesome. And then I heard Red House one day by Jimi Hendrix. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of a souped up Jimmy Reed groove on that song. But I heard that and I'm like, whoa, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And that kind of hooked me on it. So I started listening to that. I got into Stevie Ray Vaughan. And then I started getting in. A lot of people seem to take Stevie Ray Vaughan and I have a little beef with him, and that's simply because a lot of people will listen to that and be turned on by it, and that's as far as they'll go.
Yeah.
So I play a gig, and it's Freebird, and it's Stevie Ray Vaughan, and it's Wagon Wheel. There's so many songs that are overdone, you know, because people just, they see it, they dig it, and they stop there. But if you dig into his influences, then you start getting some really great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Stevie Ray Vaughan was big on Jimi Hendrix, Tone, Albert King Licks. He listened, and he listened, it went on and on for there, some of the hillbilly stuff from Texas and stuff. And so I started digging into Albert King and Freddie King. And then when you get an opportunity to meet a guy like David D over in a podunk bar in Belleville, you have a little bit more of a frame of reference as far as a common ground and a conversation to have with the stranger. Because I'm like, you know Stevie Ray Vaughan? Maybe he didn't. Because he learned guitar 20 years before or 30 years before Stevie Ray Vaughan was ever born. But if you know these other guys, hey, we already got something in common. So I picked up with David D, and he was a sweetheart. He said, I'll give you $75 if you come down next Sunday to Club Illusion in East St. Louis on Easter Sunday and sit in with the band. And I'm like, totally, dude, I'm there. I'll drop out of my classes at Carbondale because I wasn't going to pass anyway, and I will be there. So that Sunday, I drive out to East St. Louis, and my whole life I grew up here in, like, if you stop at a stop sign too long in East St. Louis, you'll catch a stray bullet.
Yeah.
And so here I am going down in a club. I got jeans and like a button-down shirt and a tie-dye shirt on or whatnot. And I walk in the door, and it's a Sunday, right? So that's church day. So everybody's dressed out to the nines. They got hats. They got nice suits on. I look like a fucking rat. And I walk in the door, and the music stops, and everybody turns around. And I'm like, So I just kind of walk to the stage. I get up there, and then we start playing, and we're just playing these old blues songs that we know together.
Yeah.
And I'm shy as shit and all that kind of stuff. And people are like, yeah, you know, that kid can play. Right on. I'm like, well, that make me feel like I'm a total rock star, you know, at 18. And so I was hooked. And I'm like, I would never find myself in a bar where I'm the only white person there and I have anything in common with anyone in there. But we had music in common.
Right.
And so you can play this. I'm like, what do you know about Little Milton or Bobby Bland or Howlin' Wolf or Muddy Waters? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm playing it. And so automatically you're in, you know. And these people became friends of mine. And for a good 5 years before I ever set foot in Soulard or downtown at BB's or any of these clubs in the city, I was playing in East St. Louis and Allerton, Venice, North St. Louis, like Jennings, Wellston, and all these clubs. And it was my life on generally on the weekends. We didn't play too many weekday gigs, but it's like every Friday I'd play from 3 p.m. till 3 in the morning for $30. And it was amazing because we're there in a community. We're on the north side, and we kick into these sets, and we'd have a portion of the night where an MC would come up, and the guy's been doing it for 40 years. His name was Jules Carlos. He was dressed to the nines. He had a little notepad that he worked on when he got in there, and no one was allowed to talk to him because he was handling his business. And he'd get up on stage, and he'd do an MC thing, and he'd make like community announcements while we're playing a shuffle. And he's like, kick it off, 1, 2, 3, 4, pop, 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 pop. And we have to play real quiet, which is really hard for me to do because I wanted all the attention. And as we're doing that, he's like, well, this family, you know, their son graduated high school, and everyone's like, yay, or this kid got shot by the police, oh, that's down. But it was literally like the community hub was that place, and we'd play there. I could get a 40 for $2.75 when I was 18 years old. It was amazing. And we got the opportunity to do that and just get a completely shifted world perspective by having this opportunity to play music in these clubs, which to me felt like more real to be playing in those clubs with those bands and for those people as opposed to playing at, you know, Hard Rock or, you know, anything like this where you might get paid more, but you're playing to basically drunk Cardinals fans. And nothing against Cardinals fans, but it's different. And to me, it felt really real. And I was introduced to people who had been doing it for 40 years with no recognition, you know, singers, guitar players, and all that stuff. And the more you dig into it, it's like the more you find. Mm-hmm. And so then the challenge became, okay, how can I up my game so I can keep improving so that I can gain these guys' respect? And, you know, if you were playing something good, you would hear it right away. And if you were playing something bad, you would hear it right away. It was a really interactive audience. And good God, I got in so much trouble without getting into trouble. It was amazing. So for me, that was just unheard of to have that kind of a opportunity. Finally, I got a little older. I got my girlfriend pregnant, and I needed a little more money. So I had to lay those $35 gigs aside and start trying to do my own band. And so I get down to BB's through, like, Big George Brock, Boo Boo Davis, and these guys that have been doing it for years. I mean, all these guys gave me an opportunity because I was hungry and I cared and I respected the music. And that gave me the opportunity to come down and look a club owner in the eye and say, hey, man, I can deliver if you give me a gig. So give me a gig. And then it it just kind of goes from there.
Yeah.
And then now it's funny, I'm older, I'm 34 now, so there's younger guys coming up, and it's my obligation, and it's my pleasure to give them a shot and take them under my wing and bring them along.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing about it. It's a living tradition. It's not learning from a record and playing in your bedroom and John Mayer's bullshit stuff. It's going out there and doing it for real, right. And we get to do that here.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, when you said the music stopped at the club, I came to mind you ever watched that movie, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
I was thinking Pee Wee Herman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good one.
Last request, get me to the stage.
Yeah. There's that scene where, like,
that's how old I am. God damn it.
But I was thinking that, because they go in there, and then he's like, nobody leaves without singing the blues. And
it's Albert Collins that says that. Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth Shue. She was hot.
I
was 12. That was peak times, man. I watched that on slow motion.
Yeah, sorry. Awesome. Wrong movie title.
No, it's all good. There's no royalties here.
Yeah.
But that was Albert Collins. Albert Collins was a Texas guitar player that was... You dig into this stuff, and you find all these guys. I thought... Albert Collins was the be-all, end-all of the Telecaster sound, which is a Fender Telecaster is a kind of guitar.
Yeah.
And he played with his amps cranked up and a treble cranked up and reverbing. He played with his fingers, and he had this real popping, snapping attack that no one else could touch. Later on, I figured out that he was copping Clarence Gatemouth Brown, who came before and played with a capo and played all these different runs. So it's like, pick any artist, and you hear this, and you're like, God, this guy was such an innovator. That's so badass.
Yeah.
And then you listen to what he was listening to, and like, no, this fucker was ripping it off.
Oh, sure.
And doing his own thing.
I've said it on here a couple of times, and I'm not to bash on them. I think that they're really good, but Led Zeppelin is one of my biggest things where, like, people love Led Zeppelin. And, I mean, granted, they're very talented at what they did, but... almost all Led Zeppelin 1 is blues rips, and like it's just all sample material from, you know, Muddy Waters, and
Willie Dixon.
Yeah, Willie
Dixon. They weren't necessarily sampling; they were playing it, but they were definitely robbing it.
Yeah,
and Robert Plant even said it. You know, a little thievery goes a long way. But the thing is, the blues guys were thieving it from the guys that came before them too. But the funny thing about that is that Willie Dixon actually sued Led Zeppelin and got paid. He won like a copyright for A Whole Lot of Love and got like $1 million settlement in 1970 or 71. Willie Dixon is like the only blues artist who ever actually got paid because he wrote all the tunes and he fought for them and he got them. But even Howlin' Wolf, man, which I think is probably one of the most incredible performances there ever was, who's just downright scary to listen to.
Yeah.
And nobody in town. I wish I could. I can't play his shit like he did. I mean, as close as you try to come, you're only trying to get there. And he just had it, you know. But he got his whole vocal sound, which is very distinctive, from Charlie Patton. And Charlie Patton was playing at the turn of the century, you know, 1900, 1905. And if you listen to Charlie Patton and you listen to Howlin' Wolf, you're like, so that's where he got it.
Yeah.
You know? And so it just goes back and back and back. It probably goes all the way back to West Africa,
yeah.
you know, where these traditions are passed on and, you know, nothing's new under the sun.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't know. That's one thing I do try to say is like try to just, you know, try something different. Try, you know, take a chance and listen to something different that, you know, where these guys would influence these people. And like, just because you like this doesn't mean you probably like this too. But people are so kind of stuck in a lane and, you know, like, I only like this. And it's like, but there's a lot of great music. I mean, there's a lot of things that never had the exposure like Led Zeppelin did, you know. It's like there's a lot of these people that there's, you know, great music out there. It's just you got to go digging for it a little bit.
The cool thing about blues and rock and roll is that it was really synced up to technology at the time, where amplifiers and electric guitars were brand new things in the 50s and 60s, and then the population boom from like Mississippi to Chicago to chase after jobs brought that culture up here at about the same time after World War II. And so you had a confluence of the people and the music and the culture and the technology coming together at the right time. And in America, nobody liked it. You know, R&B and soul and funk were coming in, and nobody liked blues records after the 50s.
Yeah.
It was the English guys that dug it and get a hold of these records. They're like, every time I play this, I get three women to take their clothes off. This is amazing. I'm going to learn how to play this stuff. So that's where you get Eric Clapton and Peter Green and all those guys. Were like, this is amazing. It took people from another country to realize how great these black performers were from the United States.
Sure.
And there weren't, it wasn't oversaturated at that time. You could only travel as far as a vinyl record could travel, or maybe a little bit of radio. Mm-hmm. And now we live in a digital age where you can put something on Pro Tools and send it, you know, all over the world in a minute, and there's 50 million different new artists trying to make a scene, so it's just oversaturated. So, I mean, it was a real special time when all that was happening, and that interchange was happening in the late 60s, you know, where it all kind of came together, and that technology was a big part of that.
Mm-hmm. That's another, I mean, that's, we've had just discussions on previously on the show, you know, regarding like Spotify and all this, you know, the modern society we live in with music and everything, how fast it is, how fast, you know, that you said you can put it on the internet and spread it around, and then you know, it's just it is kind of crazy, this technology driven world we live in right now, to where, you know, anybody with a camera and a laptop and can make a YouTube video and then become a overnight star. And
it's kind of killing music, and it kills journalism and all that stuff. When anybody can blog, there's not really any standards to do, so it's really tough to find the good stuff. And I even hate really describing blues music as blues as a genre, because that encompasses so many shitty bands playing what they call blues, but they're not really taking the time to dig deep and really get what it's about. Or maybe they focus on the musicianship instead of the connection between the crowd, which is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And that was really good bite. The problem is, oh man, I lost my train of thought. Oh well, let's take a drink. The problem is, sorry about that, it just took me a second. There were a lot of dynamic performers who used the blues form, but they weren't playing blues at the time. I mean, they were either called race records or this or that, but there were a couple of dynamic people that played blues, but it went deeper than just cataloging as blues, you know? Like a Muddy Waters was a dynamic performer. He could play jazz. It would still be in Muddy Waters. It was amazing. And blues, just like jazz, I don't particularly like jazz because there's so much elevator music in it, but there's also artists that really personified it and did it. So you really, right now, when you're just smothered with entertainment options and there's so much shit out there, then it's tough to really sift through and find stuff that's innovating and it's entertaining. Sorry about the... lost my train of thought.
That's all right. I mean, I agree. It's a big thing I always talk about, too, is the fact that we live in a thing where now where everybody wants to be, they want you to be defined, you know. It's like, well, are you rock, are you you know, blues, are you soul, whatever, you know. So you got to have your genre where you and your lane that you go. And I've said it on the show before too, but it's somewhat such a great quote, but one of my favorites is Will Hoag, and he had some, like, you know, great rock stuff, and now as some of the stuff's getting a little more country. But I mean, he plays it all, and his live shows are incredible, and a large, you know, wide range of different sounds. And he said one time on stage, and he said that he was being interviewed, and somebody asked him, like, well, what do you guys do? You play rock or country? And he's like, we play Will Hoag music.
There you go.
Like, I was like, that's such a great quote, you know. It's like, that's all it is. Just play who you are and play whatever comes out. And I'd hate that, you know, everything has to be labeled. And it's like, just why can't we just have good music?
I always say country and western when people ask what I play, but that's an old Blues Brothers joke.
But
I should say the best. I play the best
music. Yeah.
But yeah, it's the labels are misleading because everything's related anyway.
Yeah, well, and people come up with like a preconceived notion of what that might be. You know, it's like, blues, I've heard that before. I don't really want to go to that show. And it's like, but, you know, you can play it totally different than somebody else. And even though it's still considered blues, but, you know, your influences, like we said, and coming in and how you approach it and everything else. And
I came up with that whole classic rock, hard rock. I mean, first, before I was really introduced to blues music, was all hard rock and all that stuff, which in itself was influenced by blues. So, I mean, it gets back there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You saw you guys play one night at Moonshine Blues Bar in St. Charles. which is one of my favorite spots. To
Moonshine is awesome. I haven't been out there in a while, but that's a great room. The acoustics in there are incredible. I used to play upstairs in the restaurant section for like a happy hour while people were eating dinner, so I invented a drink called the Rye on the Sly because there are all these kids around eating dinner, and I still wanted, you know, to have some fun. So it was rye in a little kid cup.
Yeah.
It was rye on the sly. That's what we did down there. But that's a great venue. Nobody really knows about it because it's off the beaten path a little bit.
Sure.
And it's like a destination only. You're not going to really draw people off the street. Mm-hmm. But it if you know where you're going, it's a great room.
Yeah.
Great room to play in.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite spots to catch a show. And it's kind of, for me, like I live up in St. Charles County there, so it's a nice alternative, even though I still wind up all the time down in the city, but it's a nice kind of alternative to Broadway because a lot of the talent is coming out to Moonshine and there, and so it's kind of neat to bring an audience blues to an audience on the other side of the, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like. I know a lot of Illinois people don't like crossing the river, even though it takes 10 minutes just to go to downtown St. Louis, and I'm sure a lot of county people don't like coming downtown.
Sure,
but it's the people that have been running that place have been doing a good job of actually bringing good, and they go for the blues thing, but bring in a lot of great blues acts in, and also some from out of town that'll come in there and make a weekend out of hitting one of the joints downtown or the Blue City Deli, and we'll get an extra night at the Moonshine. And like I said, it's a great sounding room. The staff's awesome there. You ever been to Magpies?
I don't think so.
That's on Main Street too. It's a little further up.
Okay.
But they've got they do live. I think there was like a live music ban. There was like an ordinance ban in St. Charles for a while.
Okay.
So you couldn't play blues outside, or not blues, but music outside. And then they lifted that, and so Magpie's another place. It's in like an old 300-year-old, like the Spanish governor's mansion, which is tiny, but at that time it was a mansion. And they have they do outdoor music there in the summertime. And I know Miss Jubilee plays down there. I play down there. They have Brian Kern, different people play.
Yeah.
They've got the best mahi tacos in St. Louis, guaranteed. Yeah. And they cook them out on an outdoor grill. And obviously I'm a foodie, so I'm not just really plugging the joint so much as I'm plugging the food. But that's another spot that's great.
Yeah.
And another mom and pop place that's stepping up and having live music there. It's awesome. So there's a couple spots in St. Charles that are down.
Yeah. I've recorded the video of it, but it always sticks with me because I love the song, and I love how the way you guys do it. But as you guys did a woman from J.J. Gray Mofro that night, and I love that tune. But it's fun to watch you guys take these songs and kind of do your own thing with them. And even though, I mean, it might be pretty close to the originals on a lot of them, but it's fun also to see what you guys do with them. And I think that night you had Aaron and Adam from Funky Butt sitting with you, and I love watching those guys play.
Since we started the Blue City All-Stars, it originally started out with the guy I really wanted to play with that I never had an opportunity before was Rich McDonough. He's an incredible guitar player, plays with Rough Grooves, plays with different bands, plays down at BB Salon in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Awesome guy. And I just wanted an excuse to play with him. And then the other guy was Preston Hubbard. And Preston's a bass player who played with the Roomful of Blues, the original Roomful of Blues, played in the Fabulous Thunderbirds. He was, when the Fabulous Thunderbirds were winning Grammys and in movies like Cocktails, he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And did the whole MTV thing, partied like a rock star. I won't tell all the stories about Preston, but he's a legend. And he's an incredible bass player in spite of however much fun he might have had.
Yeah.
And he was in a band called Los Carnales, which was a killer group. And Paul Mann, who's also an East Side guy, on vocals. His son Derek. Ryan Wakin on guitar. And I wanted to be in that band so bad, so bad, so bad. But Preston always dismissed me as, you're a blues rock guy. Like, just because I didn't know Jimmy Von Licks. And I'm like, come on, dude, I can play Motley Crue, but that doesn't mean I can't play blues. And so I could never get in, and then that band broke up, and I was like, hey, Preston, you want a gig? And it's my gig now. So then I got a chance to play with him and Rich at the same time, and Joe Meyer was playing drums. And then change is the constant, you know. Through the years, things will come and go and come and change, and you're never really comfortable doing the same thing forever, because otherwise you're playing the same thing.
Yeah.
So in order to grow, I wanted to incorporate different elements, so I got hooked up with the Funky Butt Brass Band guys, Aaron and Adam and Ben, who are lights out, and they're kind of doing their own thing with the Funky Butt Brass Band, which is more New Orleans based. And I'm like, well, come on, fellas, let's dig a little deeper into it, get you out of the comfort zone and play some other stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were totally down. I mean, those guys don't hold back.
Yeah.
So then I got a chance to to incorporate them into the in the scene and learn how to play with the horn section, which you don't, you're not born knowing how to do that. You're going to learn how to do it, particularly as an asshole guitar player who wants to play, you know, solos all the time. So you're, I mean, the whole point is to incorporate different personalities, different instruments into the band so you can learn how to manage it and make it sound great and not sound like one guy. Because the problem with the, I keep going back to Stevie Ray as an example, is you're like, well, this guy was a virtuoso. He could do guitar solos, oh, it's amazing, and all that kind of stuff. But the rhythm section really wasn't doing anything except keeping time for him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's really not blues. That's Stevie Ray Vaughan. He could pull that off, and probably due to a lot of cocaine ingestion. But everybody else who listens to that and is influenced by it is like, oh, I can do that. I just go... No, he could pull it off, thanks to cocaine, or not. And but not everybody can do that, so you draw the wrong conclusions. And what's more important is for the unit to sound great, not for any one guy to stand out.
Yeah.
So my thing was, yeah, let's have a horn section. Let's do that and play. When you play selflessly, it's better. Unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, I'm going to use Drunk Cardinals fans as an example. And I love the Cardinals. Yeah, that's great. But they'll come out and they're, hey, play Stevie, play that. And they want to hear a ripping guitar solo. Sure. And it's like St. Louis blues is really piano driven, you know. And then horns and all this stuff is what really makes it work. So anyway, to get back to your original statement, that J.J. Gray song is one that... it's so great for horns, you know. And we got a hold of that one, and we learned it, and we heard it. And I'm like, hey, let's do this one. It's real simple, but let's slow it way down. Even from the J.J. Gray version, which J.J. Gray is about as soulful as it gets. Mm-hmm. But let's slow it way down, and way behind the beat, and drag this thing. And, I mean, you know, the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's talking about how to get it done. And that's where we do it, and that's putting the St. Louis stamp on it. It's someone else's song, but it's like, no. Listen, you're going to feel this down in your marrow. So we slow it down that way and let the horns do all their bit and build it up into it's powerful stuff. I love those guys.
I think we touched on a little bit off mic too, was you guys you were there the night at Oyster Bar when Adam was shot.
Yeah, I can't thank Adam enough for getting shot on my gig, just so I could get all the press out of it. Thank you, Adam. I did give him my cut for the night, just so you know. When you get shot on a gig with Big Mike, you do get all the money that Big Mike paid, which was woefully inadequate to cover the indignity of catching a stray round. And apparently they got the asshole, and they also just rejected his bond. They tried to reduce his bond and let him get out back out on the streets. So everybody wrote letters to the judge saying, seriously, you shot a trumpet player? I mean...
Yeah.
Come on.
Right.
But that could have been a horrible night, but it was kind of funny. I went out there and I found Adam. I was inside after the gig counting up the small amount of money that we made, and somebody walked in the door and said, hey, there's shots fired. Everybody stay inside, be cool. And I'm like, all right, it's downtown St. Louis, whatever. I don't even faze me. So a couple, take my time counting out, you know, double counting because I've been drinking. And then I go out and I look for the bartender and she's like, hey, you need to go check on Adam. And I'm like, what, is he thrown up in a dumpster somewhere? What's going on? She's like, no. And I go around the corner and I look and I see my friend sitting on the ground. His shirt's covered in blood. There's a guy with a towel on his shoulder, you know, putting pressure on the wound. And his Bud Light is in his left hand instead of his right hand, which is strange. And it's Bud Light Lime, excuse me. And he's like, yeah, that just happened. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus, are you going to die? What's up? And he's like, no, it went in and out. It's okay. And I kind of figured, okay, we can be freaked out about this, or we can figure, like, we'll laugh about this 5 years from now. And since you're not going to bleed out and die right now, let's just laugh about it now. So I kind of took that aspect of dealing with the shock of it all happening. But talk about street credibility, man, taking a bullet for your art. I mean, it's not easy for horn players to get street cred, but he's got it. He's the baddest dude in town.
Yeah.
He makes some pretty badass deviled eggs, too.
Oh, so yeah?
I think that's why. I think it took that bullet to really set those over the edge. Ask him about it.
Yeah, I'll have to take him up on that sometime. I love deviled eggs.
I know. He balls up.
There was one other thing I wanted to bring up. It's totally off topic of everything else, but I was on the way down. I heard the news story that a former Power Ranger actor stabbed his roommate with a sword. Have you heard about this at all?
I think I heard the headline, but that's all I know.
That's the greatest headline I've ever heard. Like, for me, I grew up watching. I mean, I was never huge, but I remember watching Power Rangers.
Same with me. It's He-Man. Yeah. I feel so dated. God. The power. Different sword. Yeah. So that's messed up.
But yeah, I was like, that is the funniest headline, though. Like, the fact that he, like, there's, in the show, he had the sword. And then, like, so, and he's like, what kind of nut sleeps with a sword? He's got, like, the sword under his bed or something. And they were talking about it that the roommate, like, opened the door or something. He was in there with his girlfriend or something along those lines. And then he just stabbed him with the sword in the abdomen and killed him. And it was like, this is the craziest thing.
Well, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show?
Yeah, right. Yeah, man, I don't know. But anyway. So, yeah, you got some dates coming up?
I would love to plug some dates. Yeah. All you listeners out there, I play every Sunday at the Beale on Broadway, which is just south of the stadium. Don't worry. You won't get shot. Your car won't get broken into unless you leave gleaming diamonds out on the thing. But we play every Sunday from 8:30 to 10:30. No, 8:30 to 10. We just do a 90-minute show. Yeah. We hit it and quit it. It's really kick-ass. I hope you guys come down. If you get there before 9 o'clock, there's no cover. And if you stick around, Bud, who's the owner, we call him Uncle Bud, is pretty down. He gives me a comp tab to toss out some free drinks, which is very rare that I get that kind of liberty from club owners. And we've been known to buy the entire house a round of shots.
Yeah.
So please come out on a Sunday. And aside from that, let me dial up the calendar here.
Is Hot City Frank's still there on Sundays?
Hot City Frank's is there every night. He's actually inside. Okay. He's not on the patio. They've actually built him a booth on the outdoor, like, smoking tent.
Yeah.
And he's cooking indoors.
Yeah, I was down there just a bit ago and got myself some dog with mud sauce on it.
That mud sauce is the
shit.
Yeah. Shut your mouth. I'm just talking about the sauce. Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is a tough one this year because it's on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So Bud asked me, hey, can you play on Mardi Gras? I'm like, yes. Oh, I got to ask the lady. So I reached a compromise. We're playing from 2:30 to 4:30 on Saturday the 14th. It's kind of like the anti-Mardi Gras gig because Soulard's going to be nuts.
Right.
But Beale's kind of far enough north that it's kind of out of the madness. And we got music all day. Al Holliday's playing. I think Jeremiah Johnson Band's playing. I'm playing. Somebody else is playing. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
That's going to be another really great gig. And then you ought to really come down to Herbie's because they were nice enough to give us a spot tonight.
Yeah.
We got a little secluded VIP area, and they've been shooing people away. And they gave us all the deals, so I got to throw them a little love. It's a real classy place. They got a $3 valet, so you can act like a boss. And I'm back here on Thursday the 26th for a solo gig, and it's a blast.
Yeah.
There's one other one. Can I make one more?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, this is the best one of all. On March 1st, I'm part of a benefit at BB's Jazz Blues and Soups, which is just by the stadium. It's called Blues Cause for Paws, and it's an event that raises money for animals. The organization is called HALO, Helping Animals Find Loving Owners, and it supports no-kill shelters in the city. And we've been doing it, I think, 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years now. And the coolest thing about it is generally getting musicians to play for free is really tough because we hate the word exposure. But we did that the first year, and everybody, like, bands came running when we're like, hey, this is going to benefit dogs and cats, you know, and no-kill shelters and benefit pets. And people were literally, like, blowing up the phones and volunteering to play. And since then, all the bands that played the original one don't ever give it up because as soon as they get off stage, they're like, we want to come back next year. We love it. And so it's really a tough gig to crack and get into for a non-paying gig. But we raise money. I think it's like $10. There's music all day long from 12 to 8. Some of the best blues bands in St. Louis. I'm going to be there by coincidence. And it's a really good time. So if anybody listens to this podcast, and I'm sure they will, but if anybody feels inspired to come out and talk, see what I'm talking about, come out on March 1st.
Yeah.
And put money to a good cause.
Yeah, sounds great. Put that on my...
It's an indoor blues festival. It can't be beat.
Yeah.
And the first year, it was a three-legged pit bull that was up for adoption. And John May, who's the guy with the ponytail and a beret, runs BB's.
Yeah.
He paid for the adoption so that the people that were fostering the dog, that had given it a home temporarily, but couldn't afford the adoption fees and all that kind of stuff, he paid for them to be able to adopt the dog. And they announced it on stage, and the people broke down crying because they got to keep this dog that they knew and love. And it's a three-legged dog, so obviously he's happy to have a home. And it was a magical moment.
Yeah.
And we every year there's a featured dog, and it's just a great event, and you know, you'll be doing a good thing if you can make it out there.
Yeah, that's a big hits home for me, because both my last two dogs, I guess technically been rescues.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't really like go through anything.
You just grab them off the street and, yeah, and give them a home. That's the way. That's the pure rescue, yeah, man. That's like the natural hat trick.
I had a pit. I had him for about 5.5 years or so. My girlfriend at the time, a friend of hers, like, found this dog like on the river, and they were down there camping or something. And then they were like, they brought him home, and they were like, "Well, we didn't know, we can't keep him." And they were like, "Would you want to take him?" I'm like, "All right." So we had no tag, no collar, nothing, and like I took him in and made it my own. And kind of a weird turn of events and everything else, a small world. So we named him Dalbo because they found him on Dalbo Road.
Okay.
And they, my buddy was working at Papa John's at the time, and like happened to be like working with another store manager from the, who lived in St. Peter's, worked by and lived on Dalbo Road and all this stuff. So Steve had a picture of Dalbo with the he was laying on the air conditioner vent, and his collar got stuck in there, and he pulled the whole vent like out of the floor. And so Steve snapped a picture of it and thought it was really funny, and they got to talking about dogs and pits or whatever. And then he goes, "Hey, here's my buddy's dog." And he goes, and the lady's like, "That looks a lot like Goliath." And it was their dog that got out.
Oh, they so, lost him, and he found a good home.
Yeah, so they were just glad that...
Free agent defection. God damn it.
They were,
good for you, though.
They were, you know, they said something along the lines that they had just got him out of, like, some kind of fighting ring or some kind of deal.
Oh, crap.
I don't... so it was kind of interesting to kind of hear some of the backstory before I got to know him, but
what a long, strange trip he had.
Right. Yeah, right. But he it was great, and I just had to put him down last spring, and it was really sad. And then that led into my vet calling me. Somebody dumped a puppy at the vet there, and this was shortly after my incident and everything. And she was like, "Would you want to take this puppy home?" And I'm like, "Okay." So
see, with a big heart, I'm shaking your hand, because that's the coolest thing about playing music really in St. Louis. Comes down to, I surround myself with awesome people.
Yeah.
They're smart, they're passionate, and it's not just the musicians, it's the venues, it's the people that you get in, you that like music, the fans that come out and the people that appreciate it are also incredibly interesting people that have their own projects going on that are passionate about, and so it really crosses a lot of lines, more than music, but it just, you know, St. Louis gets so much flack. But there's so many great people doing great things,
yeah,
and that's what we like to focus on, and we do it through music.
Yeah,
and it's
that's what
I'm so thankful for.
That's what keeps me coming back too. Like, I mean, I've said it before, and it's let alone the music, but it's the people that make up this community. And like, and for me, it's you know, it's when you're making great music and you're a hell of a nice guy along with it, makes me want to root for you and support you even more.
Yeah,
and. So
we got an election coming up in 2016, and I don't care what side of the line whoever falls on, any of our listeners fall on, if you're on this side or that side, but the reality is that in order to get elected to high office nationally, is you need many millions of dollars.
Right.
And it's going to come from one side or the other side, but anybody who has people giving them millions of dollars to help them do something lives a different life than I live.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's really, really cool to be a part of something that's people-driven and it's not money-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows there's no money in live music. We get enough to be able to continue to do our thing, but we don't do it for the money. We actually get paid to lift all of the equipment and move all the equipment and to buy our significant other's gifts after we come home at 5 o'clock in the morning. But we play for free.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, it's like on the big scale, either big business or politics, it's money that's the name of the game. And the live music scene we have in St. Louis, and comedy and art, I mean, mm-hmm. I'll say in general, I mean, culinary arts, graphic arts, music, all this kind of stuff is people helping people mm-hmm. make something different than what's being shoved down your throat.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing to be a part of.
I think there was another quote, I can't remember now who said it, but it was like something along those lines about playing for free. Like, it's the traveling around, you know, to gigs and all the loading and unloading, that's all the work. But the live music itself is the fun part. That's just good times.
Yeah.
So it's not really a real job being a musician. It's the job itself is the traveling and all that.
I have to dispute you there because you can't say being a musician isn't a real job. Musicians like got to work three times as hard something.
But the fact that like the playing on stage is like people that's like people look at an outsider view like that's the work part is just you're playing
right.
But the
performance is easy. The performance happens.
Right.
It's really cool because what we do is intangible. Unlike someone who builds something, like a carpenter, or someone who draws something, like a graphic artist or a sculptor or something like. Music is intangible, and it's really cool because it's impermanent. You know, it happens and then it's over, and then it's just a reflection out there, and that's what everything is. In the universe, we're here in a moment and we're gone in a moment from a long scale view. Mm-hmm. Is we're here and then we're gone in a flash of an instant, and that's the same thing that music is, but we can share in that.
I mean,
what's kind of cool is you send a radio signal out, you know, to the Voyager's, you know, satellite that goes out there, and it sends a wave out there that it just travels indefinitely, and it goes. It's like the light that comes from other stars started millions of years ago, and that light was an instant, and it took a million years to get where it is, and then it shines, and that's what music's all about.
Yeah.
You know, and people are there in that moment and the experience, and there's beauty and depth in a moment that is it cannot be measured because it's not tangible, but it's very powerful, and I dare anybody to say it is.
Right.
You know, it's a cool thing to have be a part of your life. If I didn't have this, I would have jumped out a window 10 years ago. You know, it's amazing. So I salute all you musicians out there. I salute all of you music and artists, fans, and everybody supporting other people doing it their own way. Thank you so much. It's a blast.
All right, man. Well,
let's get on this crepe, man.
Yeah, we gotta
finish this up.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike. Come out to a live show.
Yeah. won't look me in the eye. Won't look me in the eye. They say man's best friend. Why did he take a goddamn side of you?
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.